Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz. In a rapidly changing economic and geopolitical landscape, understanding the payment preferences of credit union members and customers is more crucial than ever. For six consecutive years, PSEU has been at the forefront of this exploration, striving to unravel the intricate tapestry of payment choices and behaviors. Their annual research not only dissects the current state of payments, but also tracks how these preferences have shifted over the past year. In today's episode, we delve deep into the findings from PSEU's Eye on Payments 2023 research. We'll uncover the factors that influence consumers when it comes to choosing and using different payment methods. For example, how do these factors vary among different life stages and economic events? And perhaps most importantly, how can credit unions better serve their members and optimize their offerings to meet these evolving preferences and needs, both today and in the future? Joining me today to further explore this is Tom Pierce, Chief Marketing Officer at PSEU, Norm Patrick, Vice President of Advisors Plus Consulting at PSEU, and Brian Riley, Director of Credit and Co-Head of Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research. They're going to share some of the key findings, including how 80% of Gen Zers are embracing payment variety, and how nearly two-thirds of consumers have used Buy Now, Pay Later. Tom, Norm, and Brian, it's great to have you all here today. Tom, I know we have a lot to unpack with this research. To start things off, what are some of the key findings in the 2023 PSEU Eye on Payments study?
Thanks, Rima. Yeah, we've got a number of interesting findings in this year's study. Let me start out with kind of the focus on mobile. So we really saw mobile wallets kind of further stake their claim as a go-to payment method this year. A couple of interesting stats out of that, nearly 4 in 10 respondents say they like to use a mobile wallet at the point of sale or, you know, when paying for something at a retail location. And particularly in the younger audience, you know, we had at least 28% of those older millennials, younger millennials, and Gen Zers say they like to use a mobile wallet a few times a week at the point of sale. So it's clearly getting some traction. And then also, when you look at some of those other payment forms digital-wise at the point of sale, tap-and-go payment options, which includes contactless cards, mobile wallets, even the smartwatches or wearables, were more preferred than folks wanting to insert an EMV chip into that point of sale. We saw more than half of folks say they would rather use some type of tap-and-go product rather than a chip into the point of sale device. Any thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to note, Tom, when you think about what COVID did and it changed so many things, and it was really a launch point for NFC to start climbing and kind of a lot more action as we got with mobile devices. And it's really starting to scale now. And that's an interesting point. And also when you talk about the appeal to the younger age cohorts, that's really important when it comes time to talk about credit unions. When you look at the median age in the U.S. at being like 36, 37 years old, and certainly an older age group for credit unions, and it's a perfect place to appeal to.
Norm, you want to talk about the next finding?
Yeah, our next finding is really based around the age segmentations of our study, really looking at the bookends, you know, the youngest segments as well as the oldest segments. And what we're seeing through this year's study is that, you know, the differences have really reached an apex through this study. So what we're seeing is 96% of baby boomers on the older end of the spectrum, they prefer more traditional payment methods, particularly debit, credit, and cash. When it goes to the other end, looking at Gen Z, they continue to be very heavy in debit, but are a lot more diverse in their preferences. So, for example, during this study this year, debit came in around 49% on Gen Z, which has been fairly consistent. Credit is hovering about 16% preference in terms of that first order of preference, with mobile wallets and P2P payment accounts coming in at the end of that. So as compared to the baby boomer end of the spectrum, you know, we're seeing the cards taking on a pretty significant portion, but a lot more coming in the alternative payment methods. And a really interesting question was asked through the study as well. When consumers are asked if they have tended to pay with a larger variety of payment methods than they did just a few years ago, not surprisingly, 80% of the Gen Z segment agreed with that question. However, on the other end, on the boomer segment, only 42% of boomers agreed, and that was amongst the lowest of any generation in the study. So, Brian, any thoughts on that from your end?
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, one of which is, you know, when you think of the CARD Act of 2009, that changed a lot for extending credit to college kids, right? And in some ways, as a parent of college kids, that was ideal because it reduced putting pizza and beer on your credit card to send your parents a bill. But it did pull back the availability of some credit. And then you also look at the whole issue of student loans, right? And that is directly affecting that universe. So the numbers make a lot of sense, I have to say that.
Now, when we take a look at, you know, the economic environment and consumer sentiment, you know, about how people are feeling about their own finances, we came up with some pretty interesting data as well. You know, looking at, you know, overall stability of their financial institution in light of some of the bank failures that came about earlier this year, from the credit union segment, we found 93% of those surveyed felt that their FI was stable and they maintained a very high level of trust in their institution. However, within that question, you know, 63% indicated that they were more concerned about the safety and security of their savings than they were just a year ago. So while that, you know, level of trust was really up there, there's still a kind of a undercurrent of concern that's there. When we look at, you know, economic outlook, you know, giving all of the dynamics that are happening in the market right now, 80% of the respondents stated that they were concerned about the overall economic outlook. And within that, 73% were concerned about their own personal finances as a result of the economy. So, you know, definitely some concern there. But despite all the doom and gloom for those, you know, who are with us in the credit union space, some silver lining is there within the numbers. You know, for example, 81% stated that they wanted to do business with a financial institution that knows them personally. And then 77% preferred a smaller FI as opposed to a larger one. So a lot of trust is really starting to surface within the smaller institution segments. So how does that compare with your notes there, Brian?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things here that are important. And first is PSEU has a series of these surveys. So it's going to be interesting to see how those numbers change next year in the 2024 survey, right? Because the economy will be much more impacted by what's going on out there. And that's really important. Another piece has to do with the general availability of people being worried about their savings, right? The FDIC insures up to $250,000. So a lot of millennials might be worried about their savings, but they're probably the safest in the bunch. When you look at other age groups that should have concern, right, as you age and start accumulating assets, that 250 limit might be have a different impact to them. So there's also an education message there, too, that might make sense as credit unions build their relationships with their customer and really focus on your savings are safe with us.
Right. Very good. So, Tom, I think you were going to head next into some of the emerging payments technology areas.
Yeah, thanks, Norm. Yes. Again, this year, we kind of dove into a couple key emerging payments topics, one of those being buy now, pay later, or BNPL, and the second being cryptocurrency. So let's cover BNPL first. So that's starting to take further hold, particularly across some of the demographics out there. On the financial institution side, of those respondents who said their FI offers buy now, pay later, 74% say they've used it, and that's up from 69% last year. About a third of folks say they've used one of those external services like Affirm or Klarna from a buy now, pay later perspective. And we've got a third of folks saying if their institution would offer buy now, pay later, they would use it. And that's a growth from the last couple of years in the survey. So clearly a growing interest in buy now, pay later. The crypto side is interesting. You know, we had quite a few negative stories and collapses during the last, you know, 12 months in that space. So a lot of big news out there. But despite that fact and the uncertainty surrounding cryptocurrency, there's still a slight increase of the respondents from the number of folks who said they either have invested in or hold cryptocurrency. It's up from 19% to 23%. So again, not a significant amount, but millennials are the group most likely to be holding or investing in cryptocurrency. So Brian, your thoughts on the emerging payment areas?
Well, you know, full disclosure, I'm a baby boomer, not a millennial. So I can buy into your number. Yep. I figured. And Norm, you're on the bus too. But, you know, when you think about the willingness to get into novel things. You know, when you reach that baby boomer side of things, your outlook is a little bit different, right? You've got a shorter horizon. You don't want to mess what you've built a lifetime to build. And when you're on the earlier age cohorts, there's a much better fit for that. So I think that's important to note. Also on buy now, pay later, that's really become an important strategy for credit unions to have. And the model there is really a post-purchase model of buy now, pay later. It's not the Klarna version where you tie in with the merchant. And to me, that works. It's a very sound way of doing it. One of the big flaws of buy now, pay later is if you could put steam on the mirror, you were able to get a buy now, pay later loan. The model that is within the credit union world lets you look at transactions and deal with it accordingly if you want to select a payment term. And the model there is a winner, I think.
And we'll talk about that more in some of the takeaways later, but that's clear that opportunity for credit unions to help their members from an education perspective about buy now, pay later, as well as financial kind of wellness education is going to be very important for those to decide to invest in that. So, well, let me cover another kind of interesting takeaway from this year. And that's a new area we kind of dove into this year was around card design and also a little deeper dive into rewards now that, you know, we're past the pandemic and when rewards weren't really mattering a whole lot because people couldn't take advantage of a lot of the capabilities out there. So first, from a card design perspective, very interesting finding. 4 in 10, 39% of the credit union members said that card design, which could include the material or like metal that the card might be made of, or whether it's made with sustainable plastic or the imagery on the card, helped influence which card they chose to use, which was very interesting as we look at the comparison to that growing interest in mobile wallets. So there's still an interest in the card design itself. And then from a rewards perspective, 4 in 10 of those folks also said they decided to use a credit or debit card solely based on whether they got rewards from that card. So it was more important for them to drive in using the cards more, as well as whether they were going to look for a certain type of reward to get back on. So cash back was, again, the leading dog from a reward standpoint, but we started to see a shift also toward credits for online shopping and also travel rewards starting to pick back up in terms of interest compared to where they were at during the pandemic. Any thoughts on those two areas, Brian?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, some of these survey questions you have to personalize and say, how do I fit into this when you validate them or when you try to figure out how they affect your business? And in a card design surely is. I've got a bunch of metal cards, and there's a certain panache to throwing that metal card on a counter with, it's got a thud to it, as opposed to a plastic one which just lies on there. Or pulling out a high-end card at a restaurant when you're splitting a check with friends. You know, that's got a certain level to it. So card design does make a lot of sense. And there are some issues that do neat things with them. Sustainability is another issue in that industry on card design too, where it's got a real appeal to the younger audiences. And that's something to keep in mind with card design. On rewards, you know, that's really one of the important things and the differentiating factors of payment cards between credit and debit. Now, there's a lot of challenges right now. If you look at the Card Competition Act, that can really gut the rewards program on the credit side. But in the interim, there's lots of rewards that could be generated. But what you refer to as the cashback as the dominant role, that's something we've seen in other surveys, but where there's a real appeal for it. And it becomes an important option in the design of a credit card model.
Well said. I think Norm's going to kind of talk about and close out with our key findings of how the debit and credit preferences have shifted this year.
Yeah, and this is always a good one, just looking at the two major card-based payment methods and how they've shaken out from a preference perspective. I'm happy to report for the fifth year in a row, which by my estimation is a half of a decade, debit emerged as the most preferred way to pay, with 43% of respondents indicating that being their first choice. Credit preference, it's been an interesting story for credit as we went through the pandemic. We started off in 2020 at a 35% first preference rate, and that has actually decreased to 29% through this year's study in 2023. And if you look at the 43% preference for debit, 29 for credit, that's a 14-point gap, which is, you know, it's widened very, very big here over the past several years. Interestingly, you know, within all this data, younger millennials, their debit preference actually went down quite a bit. In fact, it went down 8 percentage points from 46% in 22 to 38% in 2023. But, you know, it didn't shift to credit. It ended up shifting to other types of methods, primarily through gift cards, mobile wallets, and even in some cases, cash. So, again, some really interesting information that surfaced this year and, you know, solidified debit as the king of the card transaction methods. And Brian, as the credit guy, how does that make you feel? What are your insights?
Well, one of the things about credit that debit doesn't have is a revenue stream from interest, right? So that really does differentiate the product. You know, there were some interesting things coming out of COVID, and there was a tale that bled into the current year about savings, you know, where savings really spiked during COVID as those hair funds went out there, and it changed a lot of dynamics. And while the cash went out there, you also had a shift from people doing consumable expenses, and that made a big difference in some of the patterns. So it's good to see things normalize. You know, bigger is not always better. If you look at your credit card business is there to make money. It makes money on interchange for now. That might change in the short term, and we'll have to see about that. You have to weigh that in the credit union business about being on both sides and engaging your customer, just not on the debit card side, but to make sure you cross-sell them. And the other way is true, too. If you bring the new member in on a credit card, then you certainly need to be looking for the deposits. So it's great info, though, Norm.
You've all shared a lot of great data thus far. Tom, I'm curious, you know, based on these new findings in this year's study, was there anything that stood out to you? Anything that surprised you?
Thanks. I think there's a couple of things. I'll cover one, and then Norm's going to chat about another a bit. But I'll bring back up that whole card design factor again. And, you know, we talked about the growth in mobile wallet interest at the point of sale. You know, we've got 4 in 10 folks and a, you know, heavier amount of the younger consumers saying they like to use a mobile wallet at the point of sale. Well, when you talk about card design, younger consumers are particularly influenced by the card design. 7 in 10 of the younger millennials and 6 in 10 of the Gen Zers said that card design helped influence which card they chose to use. Boomers, not so much, 1 in 10. So if you think about that younger audience, they're using a mobile wallet, but yet they like to still see what's on their card or whether it's made of sustainable plastic, as you know, we talked about before, Brian. But I can even speak personally to this. You talked about the opportunity to potentially, you know, drop out that higher end card when you're out splitting a meal at a restaurant. Well, I can talk from a family perspective here. You know, we've had several, of course, cards in our family, but we've been a Disney card holding family since its inception. I've got 4 daughters and they're in their 20s. So they're in that younger millennial and Gen Z group. And they've kind of kept the Disney card as an emergency card out there. They just use it for if they ask mom and dad first, but they each pick the design of their card. So one's got Tinkerbell, one's got Yoda, one has Little Mermaid on, and they refer to it by the brand name. So we'll get a message through text, hey, dad, is it okay if I use Yoda to pay for this today? So they know it by that card. So they're clearly recognizing the image on the card as they refer to it. But there's interest out there from the younger consumer in that card design clearly.
Yeah, there sure is. But using dad's MasterCard or Visa is always a lot of fun.
That's always helpful, too, when you don't have to cover it yourself. Right. Norm, you want to cover another interesting area?
Yeah, another interesting area is really around how digital innovations, you know, continue to take root and capture consumers' share of mind. A couple of things came through the survey this year, one being familiarity with the Apple Card product and then the newer Apple Savings offering that gets bundled with that through the app. About 50% of respondents had familiarity of it, and of those, 46% have either already opened one of those accounts or planned to in the next 6 months. P2P, using those particular payment methods, are really beginning to take root. In fact, a number of consumers in the study who use P2P payment methods, at least periodically, it's increased by 18% since 2021. And when you dig into the generational segments around that, we have younger millennials leading the way with 57% of them using it either regularly or even as their primary payment method, as you know, they pay their friends back for buying lattes or pizza or what have you. And then also, you know, some of the other types of methods, you know, through QR codes and text-based and social media apps. What we found was those consumers who are under 42 years old, being some of those younger segments, they're using those on a regular basis at a rate of about 50% across those particular segments. So a lot of these new, not necessarily brand new emerging methods are really beginning to take root, particularly in the younger segments. So any thoughts on that, Brian?
But the numbers make sense. You know, if you think about when we were starting out in life or in college, you'd be waiting for your parents' check to arrive. And when you look at how this has all evolved, where I've done this, and since I know Tom lets his kid use his credit card, he's certainly done it, is being able to give that money instantly and move it on a P2P basis. And that's something that, you know, being in the industry for a long time, it's still thrilling to watch. just being able to do that. And that's a great development. And you can only expect that number to lift over the course of time.
Norm, you spoke about payment preferences among various generations. Can you kind of dig a little bit deeper in terms of like the key differences too, for example, between Gen Z and millennials or millennials and boomers?
Yeah, there's was some really interesting data that came up within each of the generations. And I think when we start at the older end with the boomers, for the first time in the history of our study, boomers prefer debit over credit, where we have 42% with debit being their first preference and 38% for credit. So we finally have turned the corner on that, which we found is the key insight from this segment this year. And then with Gen X, it continues to be a very much debit-leaning generation. 47% say that debit cards are their preferred payment method. And they tend to leverage technology for their financial institution interactions. About half leverage the website and 45% leverage the mobile app. So again, this is our debit generation and very much in tune with the technology.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those younger groups with some quick hits there. So when you look at the older millennials, these are the folks in their late 30s, early 40s. This is the generation that's most concerned about the economy. 83% said they're worried about the current economic conditions, and only 23% of this group completely agree that they feel their financial institution is stable. So that's clearly a group to help to influence on that front. The younger millennials, they still chose debit as their first preferred payment method, but the preference dropped this year. It was 46% had as their top pick in 2022. That dropped to 38% this year. So they're starting to use some more payment types from a preferred method. And then Gen Z, this is the group that leads the charge when it comes to mobile wallet technology. 67% like to use a wearable, and they prefer to use a mobile wallet at the point of sale. Any thoughts? We've talked a little bit about the generations, Brian. Any other thoughts on those?
Well, a thought on a broader basis. And one of the things that I like about the PSCU surveys is that when I look at this year's numbers, I have on this screen 2023 and on that screen 2022. And looking at how the numbers, when you ask these consistent questions, change over time. And I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. And it's one of the values of your survey is that I know a lot of work went into the front end, into the design of this, but keeping the thoughtful questions and repeating them over the course of time really enlightened. So you could see what those preferences were last year, or the year before.
Again, we've covered so much ground thus far. As we come to an end, what are some of the key takeaways from this year's study that credit unions can leverage to better serve their members? Norm, I'll start with you first.
Yeah, and I think I may have said this last year and the year before and the year before that. It comes down to three words: education, education, and education. There's lots of change in the market. There's lots of disruption that's happening in the market. And the more education you can get in front of consumers to explain the ins and outs of digital solutions and how they can improve their financial lives, you know, that's really, you know, going to help us turn the corner in terms of adopting and using those solutions that we've all invested in. 51% of those surveyed report that they would actually use those educational resources if they were offered to them. So again, educate. Tom, how about on the innovation side?
Well, yeah, well, you're saying educate, educate, educate. I'm saying innovate, innovate, innovate. So this is, I know it's easy to want to back off in this challenging time at credit unions from investing in innovation and focusing on some of the other areas where you might need to put some of the dollars. But now is not the time to let the foot off the gas in terms of investing in your capabilities from a digital perspective. You can see where consumers have high expectations from their payment solutions. You need to be there at the front line. So keep innovating and investing in those areas that'll meet their demands. Norm, you want to cover third one?
Yeah, I think it's really around, you know, competitive nature. And one of the biggest competitive battlefronts in cards is around rewards. You know, consumers are very vocal and show it by their wallets, by indicating they want a competitive rewards value proposition that meets their specific needs. So continually reviewing rewards programs and getting them to where they need to be from a functionality as well as a value proposition perspective. And then, as you mentioned before, Tom, the card design, it's a big deal. You know, a little bit counterintuitive to, you know, being moving very much to a mobile environment in terms of wallets, but, you know, people really have a connection with what the plastic looks like, what it's made out of, and what type of environment it was produced in. That is a very big concern and consideration for consumers. And, you know, it's a great time to partner with your QSO or other partners to expand and elevate the programs accordingly.
You know, Norm, you talked about education and Tom talked about innovation, and I want to throw one in, which is membership, because that's what really drives this whole credit union process. It's my experience with credit unions is it's a very different world than dealing with a money center bank and you're just a number. I have a relationship with a small institution and my daughter goes in and they know her by name. You know, I want to do a transfer and I call the manager, or we want to sponsor for one of my kids' baseball teams. They were the place to go. And building that relationship with the membership is important. And then just wrapping it all back, tying it to the older age of a credit union member has to push back, right? There's a whole level of opportunity. And that's why the numbers you were talking about on millennials were so important.
Great commentary, Brian. And, you know, you'll find a lot more findings and takeaways in the full white paper. You can access that through psu.com right on the main page. We've got a link where you can download the white paper. I encourage you all to do that to learn a lot more than you did from Norm and myself today. Any final words, Brian, to wrap this up?
No, I think we covered it. I think, you know, going back to the mantras here is education and having your customers understand not just about products, but like the importance of, I talk to my kids sometimes, I had to get it out of the ATM. Well, what do you pay out of the ATM? Well, my bank wasn't closed, so I just had to pay $2. $2 on $20 to get cash back in a day is exorbitant of a fee. You know, just understanding those nuances is important. And understanding the importance of different credit products and maintaining things well is essential. So that part is essential for a business. The innovation stands out as something that you've got to do to keep pace. And one of the things that have been pushed down in this business is just not big banks that innovate. There's a widespread world of innovation, and that's something that PSU has brought to their customers over the years. And that's worth note. And then also just going back to the membership and coddling the members and adapting programs to what they need. And even ones they might think they need, but they should ultimately think of is key.
Well, thank you very much to the Javelin team for hosting us today. Really exciting to share some results of YM Payments this year.
All, thank you so much for sharing your insights and perspective. Interested in digging deeper into the data shared from PSU's YM Payments research? Follow the link at the bottom of this article to get full access to the report. And thanks to everyone for tuning in today. Be sure to subscribe and stay updated on the latest Payments Journal episodes. And don't forget to share this podcast with your friends and colleagues.